We celebrate Christmas with the images of the stable, Mary and Joseph traveling. And today we have focus on the Epiphany, that is when the wise men or the people from the East came to recognize Jesus as someone very special. In the context of Scripture, I think it's important to recognize that these gospel stories were written in a time when the church, the early church, the first century church, was going through great persecution. And because of the persecution, a lot of the images that come from the Old Testament were very, very prominent in their minds, because good-thinking Jews know that the journey began at creation. And throughout their history, they recognize that again and again, they, as believing people, were persecuted or occupied or somehow put under the thumb of powers that ran their lives and described them as really nobody important. In fact, most of their lives, they were slaves to a government that was not their own. Recognizing that the writings of the Gospels were there to do something important, let us not get lost in miracles, and let us not get overjoyed with the fact that God came to earth and somehow made a huge difference, but let us recognize that people drew great hope from the words of prophets and from visionaries of the past, but also for those who were living among them. John, who purportedly wrote the book of Revelation, was one such person. And I chose the reading from Revelation this morning precisely because I think here is a word of a man. The whole book of Revelation basically is a mixture of prophecy and vision, two of the very big components in Judaic history, from which people drew hope, because reality gave them no hope. The world around them was hopeless. The world gave them no vision for any future. They were hopeless people. Many of them became immigrants once they were scattered all over the Babylonian captivity, the exile, and found themselves coming back to a land that was no longer theirs, and that they once, perhaps, in generations before had occupied, but now they were total strangers. And that's the flavor of the Jesus stories in the Nativity and what John here is writing. Prophecy is not about predicting the future. Prophecy is about making a critique of what is, looking at the world and recognizing its underbelly, and calling forth those images that allow people to see a deeper truth. And visions were not about daydreams and wild hopes. Visions in symbolic forms were ways of dealing with the realities of everyday life, but offering underneath the possibility that God is still active and God can still do something out of the mess that the world found itself in those days. So for believers, this was truly a profound statement. Unfortunately, Revelations gets lost in modern translation to being, you know, somehow indicative of Russia and all these different things, and that's all nonsense. The vision is much greater than that, and it's the vision that began in Genesis and comes to fruition at the end of Revelation, where God says, I am the beginning and the end, the Alpha, the Omega, and I am there always. And so these hopeful words from Revelation chapter 21. And then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven had passed away and was no more. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, see, the home of God is among mortals. God will dwell with them as their God. They will be God's people. And God himself will be with them. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Death will be no more. Mourning and crying and pain will be no more, for the first things have passed away. And the one who was seated on the throne said, "See, I am making all things new. Write this, for these words are trustworthy and true." And then he said to me, "It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty, I will give water as a gift from the springs of the water of life. Those who conquer will inherit these things, and I will be their God, and they will be my children." The word of the Lord. There was a section of the New York Times yesterday that gathered the most important stories of the news year for 2016. And a quick perusal of the topics, outnumbering the good things, were many of the bad things that have occupied the press, the media, and our thoughts about the people of the world. In some ways, there are people on this earth who are very much like the people of Israel of old in the time of the first century church. In China, there are still persecutions that go on because of religious lack of freedom. The state controls the church, and as long as everyone marches to the government, they are allowed to believe, which, interestingly, the article pointed out that many Catholics go underground for services because they're not allowed to do what they really believe. There are people in the world who have no possibility of hope in terms of education because their governments restrict education. And education is only for a few, the select few, who happen to be mostly masculine. And very rarely do opportunities arise except for the charity and the goodwill and the daring and courage of individuals who try in their own way to make education a possibility. We don't have to go around the world to recognize that the times are very difficult and the times are very iffy. And as I said on Christmas Eve, the season of hope is an important reality. But let us always remember that hope is not getting things the way we want them to be. We hold out our expectations for the world around us. We all have, for example, I don't think this is any secret, we have political expectations for the future. What will actually happen remains to be seen. We have expectations about our religion. Church is changing, religion is changing, the climate toward religion is changing. We have hope that somehow the religious experience that helps us and has supported us through our lives will somehow continue and make a foundation for the kids and the people who are coming up behind us. Morality has changed incredibly. Ethics in business seem somehow to be not as important as bottom lines and profits. Morality, meaning a way of life that is based on value shared, is becoming more and more blurred because the values we share are no longer that clear. There are values, but the sharing of those values and an acceptance of the direction of those values is not at all clear. Education is something that has made us who we are. We are the people we are because we were educated. Educated not only in terms of values and things that were going to allow us to be a part, a fruitful part of society, and maybe even be better off financially than our parents. That was always the generation's hope in the past. But there is education in vast swaths of our own country that doesn't even approach the minimum of standards, never mind of value. Societally, we have changed in so many different ways. What is important to us in our past may not be as important as it was. In fact, we ourselves have maybe shifted our value system and our view of what society should offer and might offer altogether differently. The difficulty is the generations among us are so different from the generations of the past. From our great-grandparents to our grandparents, there wasn't much of a difference value-wise. From our grandparents to our parents, there was definitely something that kept us together, kept us focused, and gave us a foundation upon which each one of us could build the lives we chose for ourselves, enjoying the freedoms and the things that were offered to us, not only by the state and the government, but by our churches, by our educational system. Everybody had pretty much the same kind of attitude. From our generation to our children, there has been a dramatic shift in terms of what focus really means and how to live our lives productively. In fact, a generation after us is, according to studies, more aggressively pursuing wealth and possibilities that way than doing anything else. Choices for college back in that generation are for things that are going to get me the most money, not what is going to benefit me to become the best person, not that I'm going to fulfill some kind of reality within me that maybe is yet to be discovered, but it is to have position and power. The next generation, from our generation to our grandchildren, extremely, extremely difficult and different. Because social media has made available to our youngsters materials that sometimes benefits them, but in other ways erodes away the value of the self, and it replaces it with something somewhat artificial, something almost avatarish, something that is out there, but not well grounded in here. And although, from my perspective, it gives a lot of enjoyment, and it certainly keeps everybody connected. My grandson has a friend in Japan. My granddaughter has best friends in Chicago and Michigan and all over the place. And they actually got together in New York a couple of times. It amazes me. All from meeting online, which is a wonderful thing. If I had had the media, I'd be very much in touch with my classmates. Instead, I got a phone call from one of my classmates yesterday saying, "Why don't we talk more often? I'm always on my way to the phone to call you when something happens, and then it's 9 o'clock and it's too late." They have an advantage. They have wonderful things at their fingertips. But I question some of the guidance about its direction and the protection of their lost innocence, which is already lost. It's an interesting time. But I think it's important for us to come back to this, people of faith. God is a God who dwells among the people. I think our generation has been primarily moved to the place where God no longer is up there, that heaven is no longer up there in some kind of a reward and gift for a good life, that God is right here. And being a believer puts pressure on us to work hard to see where God is and ensure that God is available to everyone. Wouldn't it be nice if what we did at the table this morning drew in hundreds of thousands of people to join us at this table? we may find God here. Most people don't. It is to us to be that hope for our brothers and sisters, for the next generation, and for the people like the friend I spent part of the day with yesterday who was dying. Knowing that every moment of every life, there is a gift. And every challenge that we face, there is a surprise. In all the realities of life from birth, like Carter, which we love, to dying, the reality is God is here among us. And fortunately, or not, you and I are the ones who are called to make God present. How do I make God present? Look to your life. Look to how God perhaps has touched your life. Look at those moments of awareness where you became more alive to your real self. Look to those moments, maybe sacramental, maybe accidental, where someone touched you in a way from which you walked away saying, "Oh my God, I'm really okay. Somebody cares. Somebody loves." And from that place, as Jesus would say, go and do the same. He didn't make God present in any other way except by the choices he made every day and living his life as he believed God was asking him to live his life. The same is true for us. And the parting words, I am the Alpha, the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will be with you always. So whatever happens, hope tells us that there are possibilities yet to be discovered where new life and new experiences of God can be realized on the political scene, the religious scene, the social scene, the educational scene, and in our personal relationships. The possibility of life is ours. Happy and blessed New Year, everybody. Amen.